Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Good afternoon, Pete Dillon here with you on Cravings on Joy 94.9, where it is 5 minutes past one. And today, well, there's yet another story in the newspaper this week about a restaurant collapsing. And this is a restaurant that has behind it MasterChef alumni Chris Badenoch and Julia Jenkins. My concern with this is that when we spoke about restaurants failing a couple of weeks ago, there was the talk of the MasterChef effect. These stars from Series 1 admit they're under some fairly severe financial strain as they nurse their Collingwood restaurant and bar, Josie Bones, through an industry-wide turndown. This prompted me, given its grand final day, to, rather than sit here and bore you with sausages and pies and chips and things, that we might actually replay some discussion that I had a few weeks ago around the failure of restaurants and around what it means for suppliers and staff. What it means for those people that are involved with the industry that don't, in fact, have an opportunity to seek any recourse. Those people who lose their wages, those people who lose their superannuation entitlements, and those people who lose money because they're importing wine or they are, in fact, supplying restaurants and not being paid. It seems that Josie Bones and the restaurant in question in Collingwood has been served a writ from the tax office seeking to recover about $125,000 for bills dating back to June 2011. There is suggestion that the profits are being eaten into because of competition on the hipster strip, Smith Street in Collingwood. This is not quite the case. Just 500 metres away, MasterChef George Colombaris has his new venue, which is a souvlaki place. And I'm really concerned that Badenoch and Julia Jenkins are in fact saying that competition is causing them not to be able to deliver on their promises financially. I'm really concerned in a whole bunch of ways about this restaurant. It's not the first time that Chris Badenoch has been bankrupt. And the report in The Age this week has actually suggested that. I think my biggest concern in this day and age is that people are overcapitalizing and under-delivering. So today we're going to revisit a program that we put on to Joy just a couple of weeks ago, which talked about the industry and the position it's in. Are we overcapitalizing? Are we spending too much money? And are we, in fact, causing some issues that need not be caused? I know it's going to be controversial, and thankfully Grand Final Day might. So I would like to hear from you. I'd like your thoughts. 0427-JOY-949. You can email onair@joy.org.au. You can phone 1300-JOY-949 and speak to the team on the desk. Or you can, in fact, ladies and gentlemen, send a tweet to cravings_JOY-949. I want to know what you think. Are you concerned that our industry is in peril? Do you have concerns that you're not getting the best value for your buck as a consumer? Or do you just want to make comment on the fact that somebody is going to win this grand final, which kicks off in just over an hour, ladies and gentlemen, at the MCG? So I'm interested to hear from you today. 0427 Joy949. My name is Pete Dillon. This is Cravings. It is 8.5 minutes past one. I'm probably going to open a can of industry will pass. There are going to be people who are going to send me tweets and messages and emails telling me they don't agree. There are others who are going to staunchly agree with what is going to be discussed in the next 55 minutes. We are going to talk about whether this industry is in peril, and we are going to talk to some of the key players in the industry who are going to give us their points of view. Some agree that the industry is in trouble, others agree that it is not. Some say that the fault lies with individuals, and others say the fault lies with an economy that is not in the right space for the restaurant industry. Is it the media or the blogosphere's constant demand for the new that restaurants aren't succeeding? Are restaurant empires expanding at great risk, not only to themselves, but to their investors and their staff? Is it payroll tax? Is it penalty rates? Is it the cost of rent to open a new restaurant? Is it what has been termed in this article that was brought to my attention last weekend, the MasterChef effect? What is the MasterChef effect? I'm sorry. And can that actually be having an effect on the way that we eat here in our fair city? Just this week, on Wednesday morning, the doors of Giuseppe Arnoldo and Son at Crown didn't open and their menus were taken down off the wall, a sign that simply said, ciao. Also announced this week, the doors have closed on a restaurant in Newcastle called Bacchus. It was their fine dining restaurant, one of chefs had in 2010, 2011 and 2012. This week, it's closed its doors. Why is it happening, and why is it happening so frequently? Some of you may remember last year, Justin North's Bacchus Empire closed with a debt of almost $4 million. Almost a million of that was in superannuation entitlements to his staff. Claude's in Wallara is closing after 37 years because it's just too expensive to run. These are the questions that we're going to ask today. I'm not trying to editorialise. I'm not trying to state opinion. I'm simply being the messenger. My first guest is joining me on the phone from Sydney is the president of the Restaurant and Caterers Association of Australia. His name is John Hart. John, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Firstly, thank you for your time and for agreeing to discuss what is a particularly difficult issue. John, why is it happening? Why is the industry in strife?
Well, I think, as you just put it there, that the environment is such that the cost of operating a restaurant business just do not stack up to the amount of revenue that you receive coming through the door. And it's a product of the times, it's a product of the economy, and it's going to get worse before it gets better.
John, is it fair to say that that this is due in some parts to the cost of putting staff on of a weekend, putting staff on outside of Monday to Friday, 9 to 5 hours?
It's overall the cost of putting staff on and having enough staff there to do the job. The alternate hours and the penalty rates and all of those things, yes, they add to that cost. But it's not just that. Now, on top of every single wage dollar, you've got 9.25% in super.
Yep.
You've got your payroll tax premium, your workers' comp premium. And all of these costs just layer up to give us an environment where 50% of every dollar coming through the door goes out in wages, and that's not sustainable.
Well, it's not sustainable when you're trying to make a profit. Is it also fair to say that most restaurants are running at as little as 2 or 3% profit?
Well, that is on a good day.
Mm.
I mean, the ABS reports that were from 2006, which are the most recent ones they've done, say that the average small restaurant doesn't make a profit. We now reckon the average restaurant now does not make a profit, full stop. It's just not an environment where they can make money. I mean, the old adage used to be, when I taught food and beverage management at TAFE, that it was a third, a third, a third. A third of your costs were food costs, a third of your costs were labour costs, and a third went to outgoings and profit. Well, 33% wage cost is an absolute dream these days. It just doesn't happen.
Absolutely. John, you quoted in this article that was written by Cameron Houston and Chris Vettelargio in The Age last weekend, on Sunday it appeared in Sunday's Age, that the industry is gripped by a systemic crisis. and it's forcing owners, business owners, to flout wage and tax laws. Is that fair?
Well, I firmly believe that that's the case. And I guess one of the options, if you're faced with this environment where you just don't think that there's any way of making a profit, is to opt out of the system, opt out of the law of the day. And we would never want anyone to do that, but that's certainly what happens out there.
Mm. This article also states more than 1,500 restaurants have closed their doors in Victoria in the past year. It doesn't mention those that have opened, and I want to sort of go on a slightly opposite tack. Andrew McConnell, who is a well-known chef, is about to open another business in 2014. He now has five, I think, that he's a business partner of, and he's about to open another one. To what would you attribute Andrew's success as compared to the success of other restaurateurs that are simply closing doors and walking away with huge debt?
That's really hit the nail on the head, because what is happening now is that the businesses that are reopening, the businesses that are opening their doors that compensate for those that are closing, are businesses that are owned in chain or multi-outlet operations. And the only reason they can succeed, and Andrew's an exceptional restaurateur, he can succeed because he has a sophisticated operation. He has efficiencies in the back end where he's able to share resources across that number of businesses. He can buy effectively across that number of businesses, and he knows how to operate a restaurant business.
But what's to say that, sorry, I just want to jump in there, Justin North had the same buying power and the same economy costs across the Bacasse group and went down for $4 million. What's the difference between Andrew McConnell and Justin North? They both are very well known in the industry and public names. Where would you say where's the difference in that argument?
Well, the difference is that there was one, maybe two critical businesses in Justin's empire that pulled the whole empire down because they were wrongly positioned in the market. That is, they were right at the top end where you just can't survive with the amount of money you have to spend on staff, because your staff-to-guest ratio has to be that much higher right at the top end of the market. The cost of fit-out is that much higher, and so on. So it was really the nature of the portfolio of businesses that had that effect on Justin's portfolio. But he was getting some efficiencies in the back end of his businesses. Mm. And really, that is the only way to survive these days.
It seems so.
And we'll see that more and more.
Joy 94.9.
You're here with me, Pete Dillon, here on Cravings on Joy 94.9. It is grand final day. We are having a discussion about restaurants and is the industry in some peril? This is the question. We are rehashing a bit of a discussion from several weeks ago with Paul Mathis, with the head of the Restaurant and Caterers Association of Australia, John Hart. We're also going to talk with Lizette Snaith, who is from Warriolda Belted Galloway Beef, and we'll be visiting others who have been similarly affected by the closure of restaurants where they are suppliers and they are ending up with nothing at the end of the day. I'm interested to hear your thoughts. 0427JOY949 is the number you can send an SMS. You're with Pete Dillon here on Cravings. It is now 15 minutes past when I'm speaking with John Hart. He is the president of the Restaurant and Caterers Association of Australia, and also joining me on the phone, Paul Mathis. Paul was mentioned in this article that states restaurant empires are in crisis that appeared in last Sunday's Age, and I'm very pleased to have Paul on the phone. Paul, thank you for joining me.
My pleasure.
Paul, you've heard the comments that John has been making about restaurant groups. Now, before we go any further, I want to be fair to you. You've spoken to me on the phone prior to this interview and said that you've got a number of venues that are on the market. As we're talking at this point this afternoon, those restaurants have not sold and there are no potential sales for those. I just want to make that clear to protect you in case something happens in the next week and all of a sudden somebody tries to accuse you of telling us pork pies. Is that right to say all of those things?
It is right to say, although we do have some interested parties that are, around at the moment that are looking at the businesses, so that might be, that might come to fruition.
And could do any minute. So I guess we just want to say, as we're discussing now, those businesses are on the market is probably the best we'll go. Paul, what do you attribute this restaurant industry crisis to? Or do you believe that we are in crisis, first of all?
Well, as John's been speaking, I've been thinking to myself, well, he hasn't left much for me, because everything that he said I would have mirrored. I absolutely agree with 100% of what John has said, and I mean 100%, right down to the detail of, you know, the difference between Andrew McColl and perhaps Justin's models. The restaurant industry, I mean, and some of the things that I suppose he hadn't mentioned, which I could add, is that, you know, I was trading on menus 10 years ago that are priced the same as today. So if you take that and you counter that with the way the escalated costs have sort of impacted on the businesses, not, you know, to mention rent, you know, things that are controllable, but uncontrollable costs like tax and, you know, God knows, all those things that John mentioned, we've also got this problem where people aren't prepared to pay money for the food.
Mm.
And then there's the problem that they don't want to pay money for service on weekends. They don't want to do that. They don't want to pay extra.
Mm.
It's become a very, very difficult industry to work with. You know, I love the industry. I've been in it all my life. I mean, I don't know what I'm going to do after hospitality.
Well, is that a looming crisis for you? Is hospitality going to end for you? This article, and I want to quote this article because I believe that you would like to question this particular part. Mr. Mathis announced his latest venture, a 250-seat pizzeria set to open in Southern Cross Station last month, despite recently walking away from four other restaurants, being Bang Pop and Aka Cochin in South Wharf, Henry and the Fox in the CBD, and Hawthorne East's Fire Chief. You haven't walked away from those four businesses, have you?
I haven't walked away from any businesses. In fact, the only walking I'm doing now is towards my solicitor's office to talk about what we're going to do with the porky pies that were mentioned in The Age. Not only were they porky pies, but there was quite a lot of inaccuracies with regards to, say, the Southern Cross Station deal. The very same paper interviewed me some months earlier that asked me about what that particular project was, and I mentioned that I was in partnership in a consultancy capacity to the Dominion Hotel Group, who now ultimately own that business, and my role was as a consultant. So to go out there and to say that I now own a 250-seat restaurant, and, you know, just the way that they like to sort of play up the 250 seats, I mean, if it was 2,500 seats, that would have probably been, you know, done in like 64-point font compared to the 14-point font, whatever they chose.
Mm.
But, you know, the fact is that these guys are just constantly fibbing. You know, never let the truth get in the way of a good story. So, no, I haven't left my businesses. I'm still there. Yes, I'm going to sell them. And, yes, I won't be there in the future. And, no, I don't own anything in Southern Cross Station at the moment that I can say is mine that I'm going to draw, you know, profits from.
Sure. Paul, I just want to jump back to a point that John was making before. And, John, feel free to pop in and ask a question here if you need. Is it easier when you have a number of venues to create economy of cost to be able to make sure that your staff entitlements are paid, that the Australian Tax Office is paid the appropriate amount of tax, superannuation is paid on behalf of your staff, and that you can pay your suppliers? Is it easier to do with a number of restaurants or is it not?
No. It isn't necessarily easy to do. And Justin North model's proven that, and to some extent, you know, some of the other models that have been spoken about, including mine, where you know we want to sell because we're not profitable, or we're not making money, or we're not enjoying it. I mean, I'm wanting to get out of the industry for a range of reasons, but one of the things that
your sanity probably the not the least of those things.
Correct. So I've got to say that, you know, I think that if you had four restaurants and, you know, an economy of scale was had in one area, you can't economise the scale with the ATO, as you mentioned, because that's a fixed sum. It doesn't matter if you have 1 or 1 million restaurants. You still have to pay, you know, 9% in super and X amount in, you know, in all the other costs. I mean, it is an industry which has been hammered and marginalised and slashed and torn at and pulled at and kicked in the guts by every successive government since I started in the industry in the
Paul, at the risk of being controversial and playing devil's advocate here, and John, feel free to answer this question as well, we can't continually blame government I'm sure that each time somebody goes into a restaurant venue, they are aware that there is nine point something percent super, that there is payroll tax, that there are all of these expenses, that the rents are going to be relatively high because rents are high in Australia in restaurant premises. Surely these things are considered prior to opening their doors and putting bums on chairs.
Well, they are, but as I said to you before, you know, I never thought that I would take 3 or 4 years off, come back to a worse picture. I thought, well, you know, I'll give it a go. But what I said before was, what do I do after? Well, before I did it, I thought, what do I do now? Before I set up this new wave of restaurants that I did since 2000, and, you know, since my first foray being, I had 2 forays in hospitality, the long one that went to 2006, mm-hmm. and I took a break, and then this shorter one that leads to today. The first foray was, you know, it started in the 80s when, as John mentioned, you know, things were done on a third. That's the principles in which I entered the industry. I sold at the very end of that difficult period, the very beginning, I suppose, of the very difficult period, being around 2005, 2006.
Mm-hmm.
When I got back into the industry, it was a case of, what do I do now before I got back in the industry? And I'd looked at a couple of other things. You know, I wanted to build this thing called Kitchen Head, which was a hospitality retail store that sold, you know, that sold basically things to chefs and the home cook, and also ran an online,
Which there are some already, Paul. I want you to get to your point, because I want to bring John back into this discussion, and I have a number of other people to talk to. So,
I didn't know. I thought it was just us. Sorry.
No, that's all right. So I am sorry. I should just remind people who I'm speaking to. Paul Mathis is currently speaking. John Hart is also with me from the Restaurant and Caterers Association of Australia. Paul, what my question was those costs that do exist for restaurateurs are there when you open the doors shortly?
They are. But all I was trying to say in a very long-winded way, and I'm sorry, was that I had nothing. I didn't know what else I could do. That's all I did in my life. That was what I do.
I understand completely.
I gave it a go. That's it.
Mm. John, Just to go back to that point that I asked Paul, and I'm probably being a little harsh, but is that not something that restaurateurs are aware of? When they walk into a building and they sign a lease and they open the doors eventually after they've had some menus printed and put some cloths on tables, that there are those costs of 9-point-something percent super, that there are the wage costs, and one would assume you would do a worst-case scenario on what it's going to cost you for wages a month, that there are food costs, that there are rent. I mean, there's not a lot or a huge amount of variable in there. Is there?
Yep. No. Well, there's not. And maybe if I can make this point about the sort of economy of scale issue as well. The problem that we face is that on any given year, we retain 80% of our businesses and we turn over 20% of them. So 20% go out of business. Nowadays, 19% come back in, and we have a net loss of about 1%. So those that are still in the business are in the business on the back of whatever the model was when they started, and trying to make a buck out of it today.
Mm.
The problem we have with our essential costs is that the cost of wages is going up at about 15% per annum. So whilst those costs were there when you started, they're going up at a rate that exceeds any sort of rate of growth of any cost structure of any sort of business.
And look, I'm firmly in agreement with what both of you are saying, and I don't want to be harsh. I want to read something that was provided by somebody who's currently the CEO of a small empire. And she says, fortunately at our empire, we pay our staff and suppliers first, but that doesn't mean to say that in the low cash flow times, it might take us longer than the 30 days to get everything paid. That's a given. The increasing rents in Melbourne and constant increasing penalty rates are something that the general public and food reviewers just don't take into account, and they have no idea how the profitability of businesses are diminishing because of these. And I'll continue. If the industry cannot put prices up due to public demand and competition, it needs to move to the model that hotels, airlines and car rentals use. Higher prices on weekends because the costs of the services are higher then. It's only a matter of time that Melbourne goes back to becoming a Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. till 10 p.m. city, as opposed to the alleged 24 hours city that the City of Melbourne has in their strategy, or some serious price changes need to be made. I guess the real issue is that the public will pay increases in their rent, clothing costs, petrol costs, etc., but they are not willing to pay increased costs for staff wages set by government on awards, and then businesses don't have the profitability to stay open and jobs are lost. I think that's a very nice summation of what the two of you are both trying to say.
Exactly right. And the price elasticity in our business is now, you know, right at the extreme, because we've been pushed in that direction because of increased costs. So I think that's absolutely spot on.
Paul, would you agree that we need to increase the prices we pay for food as consumers, as diners, so that restaurants can stay in business?
Goodness, we had to do that 15 years ago. Like, you know, absolutely. Yeah. And a lot too, in order to be a proper business model.
And I think that's I think the biggest question. Should prices be increased for Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday, or Friday, Saturday, Sunday, when the bulk of restaurants will do their trade, or should they not? Or do you put a price increase right across the week so that the early times in the week?
They absolutely should be aggregated. I don't necessarily think that the consumer needs to worry about what days they choose to go to a restaurant. Although, you know, by increasing the prices on the weekends, it might mean that some people will be forced to, well, not forced to, but have a choice to go on a Monday or Tuesday for the sort of cheaper days. But look, it doesn't matter when it's done, I don't think. I think that as long as it is done, if I put my prices up of a meal from, you know, say $30 to $35 in one, you know, fell swoop, then I wouldn't mind if I kept it at 32 on a Monday to Friday, and then it was 37 on the weekend. But that's kind of a lot, you know, it's a big jump to some people. So I would do it in the aggregate.
Sure. John, is that the same opinion that you would hold?
Well, I think the important thing is it's the decision of the operator how they want to deal with this. The fundamental is right, though, and that is that the gap between the selling price and the cost price is too small, and we need to either charge more or reduce the cost. We can't reduce their cost because they're fixed by legislation. We have to increase prices. I should say that it was only 3 to 4 weeks ago that the law was changed so that we can again now apply a percentage surcharge on days of the week. That was prohibited by the Australian Consumer Law until about a month ago, and that has now been overturned. So fortunately, we can now get back into the business of applying that sort of surcharge on those days of the week in which we need to apply it. The issue there is, of course, that the other phenomenon here is that the cost of doing business on those days is now so much greater, that the change is so much greater, that there is a real temptation to apply surcharges and other ways of charging more on those busy days.
It's a very difficult discussion that we have to have, and I'm afraid that there are many who will look for excuses, and one of those has been the MasterChef effect. Can somebody explain to me what is the MasterChef effect?
Well, John, you go first.
Look, I've got a bit of a different view on the MasterChef effect, I've got to say. I've seen over the various series of MasterChef, particularly during the early series that were very high rating, we also got quite an uplift in restaurant turnover. So I'm not actually sure that there is this impact where people are suddenly running home and cooking at home rather than dining out. And the ABS numbers certainly show that the dining frequency is continuing to rise. So I can't see, in any of the data that I'm looking at, anything that says that MasterChef is convincing people to eat at home and not eat out.
Paul, what is the MasterChef effect, as far as you're concerned?
Well, John just sounds like an articulate version of me.
You two are singing from the same hymn sheet.
Absolutely. I'm in Melbourne, he's in Sydney. But I totally agree. I think MasterChef has been good for the industry. I don't think anybody stays at home and cooks just because of MasterChef. I think it inspires people to eat out, gives people the opportunity to further or broaden their horizons in terms of the types of food that they'd eat.
Well, maybe they're staying home to watch MasterChef and are cooking because they're home.
Joy 94.9.
Thanks for joining me here on the Gaia Station in the Nation on Grand Final Day. Joy 94.9. Pete Dillon with you on Cravings, taking you through until 2 o'clock, ladies and gentlemen. We are talking about the restaurant industry today, where it is, what's happening. This is all prompted by a program we did a little while ago and delivered to you here on Joy 94.9 on Cravings. We're revisiting that program because it's relevant. There's yet another story in the paper about a restaurant that is struggling financially. It has been issued a writ from the Australian Tax Office for some $125,000. The restaurant says it's in trouble because of competition. I wonder whether the restaurant was prepared. In fact, this restaurant has been running now for several years in a prominent position. Is it competition? Are we spoiled for choice? What's going on in our industry? 0427 Joy949 is the SMS number. You can email on air@joy.org.au. You can phone 1300-JOY949 or you can, on this grand final day, send a tweet to cravings_joy949. Currently with me, John Hart from the Restaurant and Caterers Association of Australia. He is the national president. And Paul Mathis, who is a businessman who has a number of restaurants and who was incorrectly quoted or incorrectly named in an article in last Sunday's Age that did suggest that he was walking away from his businesses. We cleared that up early in the hour. John, you said you couldn't find any data that would suggest that that we're eating less at restaurants. I want to point you to an article I've got from the 10th of May. It was in the Hospitality magazine written by Bria Carter, who says a study conducted by the Commonwealth Bank has found that fast food outlets and cafes are on the rise while restaurant dining is declining. It states that the increase has been something like 23% in cafes and restaurants, cafes and takeaways, and restaurant expenditure by consumers has dropped to almost 10% in the last little while. Is that something you agree to or certainly disagree with?
Well, that's certainly contrary to every other piece of data that I've ever seen. Although we tend to aggregate the cafes into the restaurant and catering market rather than pushing cafes down in with takeaway. So, we might slice it differently. And yes, the growth may be down at the sort of more informal dining in, some of which will call themselves cafes. Mm. But, you know, it's very difficult to define where that line sits. And I know cafes, Cafe Sydney, just for one example, might call themselves a cafe, but they're certainly putting on a pretty high standard restaurant product. So, look, the overall answer is there is no way that visitation in restaurants and cafes as a group is declining. It is increasing at a pretty good rate.
Paul Mathis, the article also states, it quotes the economist that has written this piece. Diana Messina is the economist. She says, the restaurant decline reflects a more frugal consumer mindset post-global financial crisis. Accentuating the trend is the decline of corporate spend at restaurants over Christmas as businesses cut costs and look at less traditional ways to celebrate. Do you think that's fair?
I think to some extent it would be. I mean, people do think twice about having lavish parties at Christmas time for their staff at restaurants. You know, they can do any number of things in parks or whatever, but I'm not sure that is entirely, one of the only reasons, or, you know, it could be contributory, but not to that extent. No, I don't agree entirely with that.
Well, look, another article in the same magazine some months later, written by Rosemary Ryan, states that Australians are dining out more often but spending less when they do, and when they book, they're increasingly going mobile. This is the DIMI Australian Dining Index of 2013, reveals that the restaurant industry has had a national revenue growth of some 3.17% in the year to June 31, but the spend per head has declined. Is that, gentlemen, what you think? And I'm going to make this the last question because I've probably been quite grilling to the pair of you this afternoon. Is that reduced spend per head the way that people are tightening their belts? I will go out to dinner, but I will just have a main course and a glass of wine. Is that contributing to this potential decline in the industry?
It certainly is, and that is absolutely spot on. The numbers I don't agree with in that dining index, to be truthful. But the growth, I believe, overall is greater than that. The ABS is greater than that, but certainly I agree with the trend. That is, customers are spending less, eating out more often. The amount they're spending less is not reflected in lower menu prices because menu prices are increasing. What is changing, though, is that customers will go out and share an entree, have a main course, maybe share a dessert and have a glass of wine. That's very different to what they did even 3 to 4 years ago.
John Hart, I'm really grateful for your time this afternoon. Thank you for joining us and helping us to unpack this discussion. We've got some supplies and things to get to. I'm really grateful for your time.
No problem, Steve.
Thank you. That's John Hardy. He's the president of the Restaurant and Caterers Association of Australia. Also, Paul, thank you for coming on air and agreeing to talk to me. I know you're not overly fond of journalists at the minute, but I'm really grateful that you've spent some time with us this afternoon to give us your story and an explanation of what you think is the issue in the industry.
My pleasure, Pete.
That's Paul Mathis. He is owner of a restaurant group. He's got 4 properties, and he's very clear to say that he's not walking away. Pete Dillon here with you on Cravings on Joy 94.9 on grand final day. Get out your snags and bang them on the barbie. It's almost time for the game to begin. Ladies and gentlemen, we are having a discussion around Josie Bones today, and the restaurant is in some peril in Collingwood. And my question is, this is rehashed the discussion we had several weeks ago, most of which I have brought to you already today, around the industry and what is going on with our industry. Is it simply competition? These two guys that own this restaurant, Chris Badenoch and Julia Jenkins, husband and wife, are alumni from MasterChef Series 1. So the MasterChef effect that has been discussed on this program really shouldn't be having an effect on Chris and Julia's restaurant. It has been there and established for some years. They're suggesting George Kalambaras' souvlaki joint down the road might be causing them some competition. There is a lot of competition in a lot of dining areas in Melbourne, and yet other restaurants seem to thrive. So one would wonder, what's going on with our industry? Are we not supporting it as consumers? These are the questions that are being asked. So I'm interested to hear your thoughts. 0427 Joy 949. You can send an SMS. You can email onair@joy.org.au or you can phone 1300 Joy 949.
I was bullied at school and left early.
Joy 94.9.
It was much the same. I always moved on. There was no legal protection. Financially, money's always been tight. Now I'm retiring. Super. Ah, don't ask. What I pay in rent, I'll be lucky to get past 70.
Are you over 55? For advice and support with planning for your future housing needs, call Home at Last on 1300 765 178. Explore your options so you can find a lasting housing solution with Home at Last, 1300 765 178.
You're here with me, Pete Dillon, here on Cravings on Joy 94.9. It is grand final day. We are having a discussion about restaurants and is the industry in some peril? This is the question. We are rehashing a bit of a discussion from several weeks ago with Paul Mathis, with the head of the Restaurant and Caterers Association of Australia, John Hart. We're also going to talk with Lizette Snaith, who is from Warri Elder Belted Galloway Beef, and we'll be visiting others who have been similarly affected by the closure of restaurants where they are suppliers and they are ending up with nothing at the end of the day. I'm interested to hear your thoughts. 0427JOY949 is the number you can send an SMS. I want to flip to the other side of this story now. There are suppliers across the country, small and large, who every time a restaurant goes out of business, when they shut the doors very early on a Wednesday morning, as Giuseppe Arnoldo and son did, they closed the doors Tuesday night and they did not reopen them, popped a sign on the door that says ciao, and there's a discussion between Robert Marchetti and Crown as to what is what's next. Whenever that happens, and it's happening more frequently, as I mentioned, Justin North went down to the tune of $4 million last year. 25% of that was in staff entitlements, in superannuation. When people get to that point and they do close their doors, there are people on the other end that are affected. They are wine producers and they are producers of food products. I've got two of them on the phone. The first of which is Lizette Snaith. She is from Warri Elder Belted Galloway Beef. Lizette, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you going?
Good, and I'm grateful for your time. Also with me is Matt Paul from Trembath & Taylor, wine supplier. Matt, good afternoon.
Hi, Pete. Good afternoon.
Both of you have been in this position where a restaurant, a venue has closed and you're all of a sudden down a considerable amount of money, and given that you are small businesses, that has a huge impact on your bottom line. Lizette, we spoke via the social medias, we did this, that a restaurant closed 4 days after you delivered a whole carcass last year. $4,500 for a whole carcass of some of Australia's best beef. 4 days later, that restaurant announced it was under receivership, and I'm assuming you didn't get your $4,500.
No, no, we didn't. Actually, just a quick correction, that 4,500 is over two carcasses, not just one.
Oh, I beg your pardon?
No, that's okay. Just make sure that's fair. So it was actually an outstanding invoice as well as the one that was actually delivered at the time the carcass was delivered. So, it has a huge impact. And, I mean, that's a wholesale price for us, so we're such small producers that we maximise whatever we can, and it's actually better for us financially to sell retail. So that retail value of that those two carcasses obviously is a lot more than $4,500.
And what sort of effect does that have on your business when that happens, when you've got wages to pay, when you've got abattoirs and slaughterers and those sorts of things you've got to pay? How much of an impact does that have, Lizette?
Well, I think we don't employ a lot of people. Basically, it's myself and my husband. We're really a micro business. We have a couple of people part-time.
Yep.
So we don't pay ourselves a wage. That it didn't impact in the sense that we didn't allow us to pay people. I mean, that's my point actually, is that you need to run a business that's sustainable so that if something like this happens,
you're covered.
Actually, you can still pay the people that have supported you through, setting that business up or getting it going or even being there during the running of that business.
And Lizette, you still have to eat. You can't just go out and kill a cow to feed yourselves. You've still got to eat. You've still got to keep a roof over your head.
It does make an impact. And that I guess that two carcasses to us is nearly a week's trading in the retail sense.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, it's just like working for nothing.
It's a big chunk.
It's not even, in some ways it's the amount, but to me it's more the principle that, I'm not going to say who this restaurant was. I don't really want to go into all that. But, any business, whatever it is, if they go broke, I don't understand, A, why they can just reopen up something else in a different name and different...
Well, it
and start again. And I hope that small producers are really careful about, who they allow to have credit. We're lucky in Melbourne. If that situation happened to us in Melbourne, this is a Sydney business, then I would have just gone down there and taken the carcass back. But I couldn't. It was just not physically possible.
And it's a bit hard when it's been served on somebody's plate. Matt Paul, similar story with you in that you're a wine importer. You've got to pay your suppliers. You've got to pay for the wine that you have that you import. And then when restaurants go down, you're left holding the baby.
We are. We still have to pay our suppliers. In fact, there's pretty strict payment terms on late payments for our suppliers in Italy. You simply can't do it. So we still have to pay them, and often we have no recourse to get the stock back, but quite often it's already too late.
And I'm assuming that a percentage at least of that stock has already been consumed.
It's been consumed, it's been sold in the restaurant, they've made a profit off it, and, the doors are closed. If there's stock on the shelf, it's very hard to prove that the stock on the shelf actually relates to a particular outstanding invoice. You simply have to be very careful who you trade with. And although I'm assured by our accountants that our bad debts are well below the average, it does hurt because often you have a relationship with someone, particularly in an industry as I suppose small and as intimate as the hospitality industry, wine and food.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, just picking up on Lizette's point, it's about it is a matter of principle. And when you have restaurants that close the doors and, 24 hours before that, they take a delivery of wine, that's simply dishonest and obviously, the wrong thing to do. And I've unfortunately had that happen a few times, even as much as opening the next day under a different company name and just, blaming the fact that the company changeover, affected who was actually responsible for paying that invoice, so they simply didn't pay. There's very little you can do apart from, really think carefully about who you do trade with.
And I'm sure both of you would agree. We would like to think that the industry that we live and work in, that we spend 12, 14 hours a day working in, you'd like to think there is a certain amount of honesty and trust and loyalty within that industry. But it seems, with you two as prime examples and examples of across the board this is happening, it's not just the two of you. I could probably name 15 or 16 suppliers that I know of that in the last 12 months have been similarly burnt when something has closed its venue has closed its doors.
Yep.
And you know, I look to, there was a huge opening here in Melbourne that I went to a couple of years ago, a very large restaurant sort of down just sort of in the back of town there, in and around La Trobe Street. It was a massive complex. It opened to great fanfare. It had a magnificent fit out. It had beautifully comfortable chairs. It had, you know, the most ridiculously expensive teas available for purchase. And that venue simply closed its doors. I went through the venue about several months after it closed and was astounded and shocked and, in some senses, horrified by the amount of money that was sitting there doing nothing. There was still tea, there was still wine, there was silver in there, and not just ordinary common garden variety cutlery, silver spoons sitting in there. There'd been no expense spared in the fit out and the creation of this venue, and yet the owners of that venue, as you say, have formed another company and remain in business, and all of the suppliers to that business are left with massive invoices unpaid. I wonder, does it make you, Lizette, lose faith in this industry that you are so much a part of?
No, not really. What it does is it makes me stop and think about who we're going to deal with and supply before we create a relationship, and that the people that we now, you know, that we supply and that we have done over the last 4 or 5 years are generally chefs and owners of businesses that we actually end up having a really good relationship with. Quite a close relationship with, so that there's some sort of sense of connection and perhaps responsibility to each other. Me in making sure the meat's there when they need it, if they've run out or if there's something wrong, I can fix it. And them in paying me on time and being able to sort of be able to pay me, and for me to feel confident that they will pay me. So it actually gets down to to me now, it's a personal relationship thing. And it's something like, if I just, you know, don't really trust that person, there's something about the person I'm talking to that I don't trust. I think, you know what, I'm not going to go there. Or, you know, my terms are going to be different. We've never done COD because I just don't think that's practical, because generally the people that sign the checks aren't there. You know, so that's just not practical. But I am being very careful about how much credit we give people, and generally it's 14 days with people that are new to us, and once we create a relationship, so I feel confident in them and understand a bit more about their business, then I'm happy to go a bit further than that. But yeah, I think it's the trust and it's the respect for each other's businesses, and also I think the smaller guys that do smaller cafes and restaurants and things like that, that's, you know, it's their heart and soul, as what we do is our heart and soul. So they're not, you know, I just feel like they're perhaps a little bit more responsible for their actions.
Sure. I'm sure both of you, if in economic difficult economic times in your businesses, if there's a downturn, if there's all of a sudden not as much desire for Warriolda belted Galloway beef or imported Italian wine, that you make economies within your business to ensure that you can manage. You know, you've got to pay for feed, Lizette. As you mentioned, Matt, you've got to pay for the wine that you purchase. You make economies within your business, and you sort of just buckle down and do what you do well. Do you think that's not happening in restaurants, or am I?
In some, perhaps it's not. But I think there's an awful lot out there that they actually do that all the time. And I think, you know, I mean, I don't know the nitty-gritties of the restaurant industry, being, you know, sort of kind of on the outskirts, really. But, you know, there's a lot of big restaurants, I think, that probably do it quite well as well. But it does seem that there's a lot of money to spend on fit outs and things, but some can get away with it, and I suppose some can't. But I do think that the smaller places are just probably better run and perhaps keep a tighter rein on what they spend. Or perhaps they don't have the backers. I don't know how it works, really, but
Well, I think there's a few examples of restaurants with backers that have, you know, had exactly the same issues. In fact, they seem to be able to run away a little bit quicker and easier, and hide behind the company structures. But I mean, picking up on your theme,
though, too. I suspect it's not just, you know, I mean, the textile trade's pretty ordinary in some cases, and you know, there's all sorts of industries that this happens in.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think the restaurant industry, we're not the only industry to face skinny margins and tough times. No. And I think often it's presented as if they are.
Mm.
And, you know, picking up on your theme, you mentioned the article from the weekend. I mean, you're talking, there is an example of a restaurant that had spent millions on fit-out and now couldn't get that money back. My general thought is maybe you overspent on the fit out.
Well, this is,
you know,
this is you're talking about
race to the top to see who can spend the most amount of money, and that's not a true reflection of the hospitality industry.
No, you're talking of Nick Zampalas, mentioned in the article. I'm not going to get in trouble for mentioning that. He's had an offer for $3.5 million for Silk Road after spending more than $10 million on what's been classed as a very lavish refurbishment. You know, I guess that says a lot about, you know, how you're going to recoup $10 million bucks when you spend it on a fit-out of a venue that's
simply impossible.
Especially when in an industry that's turning 3% profit. I really wonder. Guys, look, I'm really grateful for your time. It's a very difficult discussion to have, and I'm afraid it's a discussion that most of my colleagues in the media are not willing to have. And, you know, there was a tweet when this story was sent about by the editor of the Good Food Guide. There was a tweet back from George Columbaris who has said, let's get to the real issues. There's no such thing as a MasterChef effect. I'm almost inclined to believe, George, that that there isn't a MasterChef effect, and this is just, in fact, some unscrupulous operators who are not able to.
I agree with that. I don't think it's, you know, endemic, and we should all start sort of panicking straight away. It's just part of doing business. It's just an unfortunate part of doing business.
Matt, I'm really grateful for your time. I understand you're on the road on your way somewhere. I appreciate your time. Thank you. That's Matt Paul from Trenbarth & Taylor. They are an Italian wine importer, one of those people that is continually being stung by restaurants just shutting doors and folk walking away. Lizette, I guess there's no recourse for you either. You just simply get on with doing what you're doing incredibly well, which is producing some extraordinarily good product and selling to those people with whom you believe you've got a trustworthy relationship.
Look, that's right, and as I keep saying, is we just learned from that, and I won't let ourselves get into that situation again. So you live and learn, and, yeah, hopefully we won't be exposed to the degree that any bad debt would put our business at risk anyway. So, I think that's just
it's good, sensible business practice. Good on you, Lizette. I'm really grateful for your time, and I know it wasn't easy to do. That's Lizette Snaith.
Thank you.
My pleasure. From Warrielder, Belted Galloway Beef, producing some of the finest beef in Victoria.
Joy 94.9.
This comes down, ladies and gentlemen, to you. You're the consumer. You're the person that goes out to dinner and spends. Be considerate of the fact that restaurants do pay a lot in wages, particularly in penalty rates on those Friday and Saturday and Sunday nights when we, you and I, like to go and eat dinner. And be thoughtful when you go and sit at a restaurant and you take up a table for 2.5 hours, what your actual spend is. If you need to eat less but spend more, if you need to eat out less, I mean, and spend a little more and make it a special occasion thing, then do it. But do keep in mind that this is an industry that is struggling to make even 2% profit. I'm sure the business you work for is making slightly more than that and doesn't have an issue in paying its staff. I'm very grateful for your indulgence as an audience this afternoon while we put this on the table. This discussion is going to continue, and it's going to continue for some time. As an industry, we need to support one another. Go and eat in restaurants that you like. Go and support those people you know and continue this industry that has been a huge part of my life and I'm sure a huge part of the lives of many, many others.
Cravings with Pete Dillon on Joy 94.9, proudly brought to you by...
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.